Thank you, everyone, for joining us tonight. At this time, I would like to call the March 26, 2025 Diversity Committee meeting to order. The time is now 5:30 p.m., and tonight we have members joining us both in person and via Zoom. Next, we have our land acknowledgement. We acknowledge with gratitude that we gather here this evening on the traditional lands of the Dene people. This committee is committed to respecting the Indigenous people who have been stewards of this land for thousands of years and continue to do so. One way we will do this is by recommending actions that will provide safe and inclusive spaces for Alaska Native leadership in the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District. It is with honor and respect that we will continue to recognize the Indigenous people who live and learn here. Our mission is to provide an excellent and equitable education in a safe, supportive environment so that all students will succeed and contribute to a diverse and changing society. And our Diversity Committee vision statement is: students, parents, guardians, staff, and community stakeholders at the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District envision learning without boundaries, recognizing, respecting, and celebrating differences, whether our differences are skin color, language, culture, ethnicity, religion, family structure, skill level, challenges or development, sexual orientation, gender identity, age, or socioeconomic status or condition. We will ensure all students have the opportunity to realize their lifelong learning potential. Ms. Lammers, would you please call the roll?
Brandy Hardy.
Here.
Stacy Foshi is expected late. Patrick Cromer.
Here.
April Johnson. Dr. Nicole Palmer.
Here.
Kanisha Rogowski. Aaron Shoup.
Here.
Cal Gitter is excused. Aaron Crook. Samantha Kennett.
Here.
Alexis Howell. Renam Kowalski. Krista West.
Here.
Rebecca Jackson.
Here.
And Macy Birkin. The committee has a quorum.
Thank you. Our next item is introductions. We do have somebody joining us today. We have the executive director of our human resource departments. Ms. Ivory. I'm going to mess it up. It was in my McDaniels Inglefritz. Did I do it? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. It's Ivory McDaniel, and she will be giving us a report in just a minute. But first, we need to approve the March 2026, 2025 agenda. May I have a motion?
Move to approve the March 26, 2025 agenda.
Second.
Without objection, we have approved the minutes. And then next, we need the approval of the meeting notes from February 19th, 2025. May I have a motion?
Move to approve the meeting notes from February 19th, 2025.
Second.
Without objection, we have approved the meeting minutes. That leaves us our next one, which is public testimony. And Ms. McBride, did you? Nope. So we have no public testimony this evening, so public testimony is now closed, which brings us to our reports. We have Ms. McDaniels, the Executive Director of Human Resource, to present what supports we currently offer to out-of-state hires, such as our J-1 visas.
Thank you for the opportunity, and I apologize. I was supposed to come to another meeting, but I had a little bit of a medical emergency that the doctor said I can only do it this day. And so I was like, oh, of course. And of course, everything lines up to be, but you'll probably see my kid trickling in here in like 20 minutes from swim lesson two. So I'm honored to be here today to talk about this. Up until about, I believe it's 2 years ago, because all of the years start to blend together now, our district did not accept teachers that required a J-1 visa. Because of there was historical issues when teachers came over prior to that, the district then stopped accepting teachers. And it was before my time with the district, and I've been with the district for 10 years. But we began to explore it because of having shortages of teachers and that need, and recognizing that the teachers that were applying from these areas had 10, 15, 20 years of educational experience. And we're like, why can't we tap into this? What are the issues that we're having, and how do we overcome this? And so just about two years ago, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, we started to do like a historical look back as to what the issues were and how we can overcome those so that we can hire these very seasoned teachers. And so what we learned and what we discovered in doing that research is that folks were coming over from the, it was mostly from the Philippines at the time, and the state wasn't accepting different documents and things of that sort for them to be able to be certified in the state of Alaska. And so right away, we connected with the state, with the Department of Education, with DEED, and said, you know, what can we do to ensure that these issues don't happen if we start accepting these applicants? And so when we talk about supports, one of the biggest things that we did is make sure that those that we hired were actually eligible for a certificate. So we made requirements from the beginning to ensure that we could meet that, that they could meet the state's requirements, right? So ensuring that they had evaluated transcripts, because their transcripts are from their educational facilities from the Philippines. And I say the Philippines, 95% of our J-1 visa teachers are from the Philippines. We do have some from other areas as well, but the majority are. And so ensuring that we had translated transcripts of their educational experience so that the state knew what courses they had taken and what might be missing and if it met the state of Alaska's needs. So some schools don't, or some districts don't require for them to provide the evaluated transcripts, but we do have them provide that even as an applicant, just because what we don't want is for them to come here and then provide us transcripts that haven't been evaluated and to find out you don't actually meet the criteria and now we can't keep you here. Like, that's a nightmare. So, and that's what was happening historically. And so we, so what we did is for applicants required them to have these evaluated transcripts that were available for the district to review with the state of Alaska, but also ensuring that they were already working with agencies to help them with their visa sponsorship. Previously, the district attempted to be the sponsor of visas, and there's a just a bureaucratic nightmare level that could not be navigated through, and that was part of the issue. And so, again, folks were coming here to find out that I didn't fill out this paper correctly or I didn't check this box correctly, and then they sat in a limbo. And so we wanted to make sure that those things didn't happen anymore. So right up front, we work with applicants to make sure that they have a licensing agency that they're working with and that they have evaluated transcripts, because we recognize that they've been educators for 10, 15, 20 years. We want them to be able to hit the ground running when they come here, and they want to as well. And so making sure that there's nothing that the district is doing to interfere with that. So we, right away, just with applicants alone, that's what we do. When we do hire a teacher who requires a J-1 visa, we assign them one HR coordinator that they work with the entire time until they're here. And then we help connect them with their principal. That helps to provide them support so that they know that there's somebody that they can reach out to if they have questions beyond their principal. We always try to make sure that they're developing a relationship with their principal as well, but how can we help support their move and their relocation? Making sure that they have the resources, making sure that they have the information and the documents that they need, like making sure they have their contract and filling out, helping them to fill out a bunch of paperwork that the visa agency requires for the governmental documents to go through. So there's a lot of bureaucratic pieces that we help them to navigate as well. The number one issue for, and we can talk specifically about J-1 visa teachers, but I would say any teacher that's coming from out of state, the biggest issue that you're going to run into is housing. And so what we did this year, and I appreciate Dr. Minor handling this and kind of bringing this to our attention, is that over the summer, we found out just in casual conversation that at UAF, there's dormitories that are empty and that there's like student housing opportunities and apartments that are empty that are not fully utilized. And so we reached out initially to say, is that something that we can fill people up in? Initially, they told us no, but we're persistent. And we kept at it. We're like, why not? And so we did. Actually, we were able to reach an agreement with UAF to be able to, for folks, and it's not just teachers with requiring a J-1 visa, but it's for teachers that are coming in. A lot of people, what you'll find is that they're coming here prior to their families. Like, even if they're relocating military-wise, or we've had folks that are just relocating for whatever reason, for their spouse to go to school, and they're coming by themselves initially. And so they may not need a full apartment or a house for a few months, but they're looking for housing. And so this is an opportunity for them to find something at a reduced cost for them. And so we've worked out, and we have a handful of folks that are utilizing that option. We also help to, as much as we can, provide tips with housing, like connecting them with Birchwood, which I personally find very expensive. Wedgwood has been really good about assisting as well. But one of the great things that has happened, because we are a few years into having teachers relocate from internationally, is that we have a pretty core group in our district. So in a lessons learned, so we have a phenomenal teacher that's at Randy Smith that has now navigated the entire process and has really been a voice to help those teachers coming in to be able to say, hey, do this, do that, and be able to help navigate that. But the number one challenge is housing. But we've had a lot of people step up to help out when there's a need, and we put out a need that somebody's needing housing. We've been pretty successful. We've had a principal that rented out a dry cabin. We've, you know, things of that sort. So everybody's kind of pitched in to help. And we've had people that, you know, unfortunately, we had a couple of people that came in and thought they had housing, but then we found out the day before they didn't actually have housing. So we provided them a hotel to help get them going. So we just continue to communicate with them about what their individual needs are. We've had some that I've got it, we didn't need to help at all. And we've had some that just need a little extra support and guiding along the way. And so that's why we meet with them individually, and we give them one HR coordinator that they can work with to answer all those questions and help guide them along their way as they transition here. When they arrive, like physically arrive in Fairbanks, typically the principal meets them at the airport, if possible. We typically, that's what's typically happened. We've also arranged for rides and cab services and things of that sort if they're needing that initial kind of getting around to help navigate them. Another challenge for these teachers coming over internationally is that they cannot apply for a social security number until they're physically here. And so day one, they are going to deal with the bureaucratic nightmare that we're all like, yeah, the DMV and Social Security office. So day one, they're Social Security office establishing, and then they take a document from there that there is a bank in town that is willing to work with them to establish a bank account and gets them set up. And so we've been able to help navigate through that process, because day one, they're needing to kick in and get that stuff done. That's very important. We also provide a relocation bonus for them. And some folks have talked to us and said, you know, it's typically a reimbursement and we provide that after the first paycheck. But some folks have talked to us and let us know that, like, the hardship that they're having. And so we've been able to get approval to kind of front the money to them as well. And so we've worked to do that a couple of times just so people can secure that housing if they're needing to. And or the couple of people that got here and realized that they didn't have the housing that they thought that they did. So it's really unique support that we provide to each person that's coming over. And I know that we're talking specific to J-1 visa teachers, but, you know, that's really for, there's a lot of people coming in from out of state. So the opportunities are the same for anybody coming in, but just recognizing that there's a bit more challenge just for folks internationally coming in that has to navigate our bureaucratic processes. And so really wanting to provide that support. So between HR, the assigned coordinator, the principal, and I know that also the union has stepped up to do a big role in help supporting. And I wouldn't be able to articulate all the supports that they provide as well, but I know that they have met many at the airport as well and have provided support in that area. So it's been a big wraparound, and I've appreciated all the support that everybody has provided to these teachers to make them feel welcome to our community. Any questions on that?
How many of the J-1 visas or out-of-state folks do we have in our district at the moment?
So the J-1 visas are, if I understand your question correctly, are folks that have come over from an international country. So we have folks from the Philippines. I know we have one from Ghana, and I'm totally drawing a blank on the other. Zimbabwe are the three countries that we have currently teachers come. So if you're asking how many, we probably have like 20 to 30. Mm-hmm. Yes. I will tell you that I would say that The majority of them are special education teachers, is what I find.
Is there much turnover? Like, are they staying for just like a year and then they're like, Alaska is really cold and I don't
know. No, I think there's only now not, I will tell you that not every resignation and retirement comes across my desk, but I will tell you that there's only been one teacher that I know really struggled and stayed a year. And that was just what she articulated to me, was just the struggle of being away from her because she had kids. And she thought it was a great opportunity to take care of her family, but realized it was not what she wanted to do, and she struggled to be here. But that's the only one. I believe that the rest, the majority have stayed. I know that, but I couldn't tell you like, oh, three have left. I couldn't tell you exact numbers.
Go ahead, Ms. Foshi.
Are we thinking about putting something on our website, like moving to Fairbanks? I know that Bering Strait School District has a really nice, you know, moving to BSSD page on there. And I just thought that would be something that could really help everybody. I mean, if
right.
military
yeah.
or if they're moving from.
Yes. So Rebecca Herby in the communications department is working to rebuild the website. And she has actively been working all year on the HR website, which is a bit of an undertaking. I was just informed she just finished the benefits part of it, which that's atrocious itself. So yes, that is part of what we're establishing in our new website, is kind of a, if you're relocating to Fairbanks, what we have been doing is we're hiring and sending out letters of welcome to the district. You've accepted this position. We have provided information at that point to say, here's an opportunity for housing, like our partnership with UAF, things like that. We've given that information ahead of time. But yes, we are working to build an actual website.
And can as a hiring manager, can we be CC'd on all those emails? Or just if it's an out-of-country person? Because I didn't know some of it that came through, like especially the Social Security number when they got here. So I love like our hiring guide for managers. This is awesome, and I use it all the time. But if we could specifically have the steps for hiring outside the country.
Yeah, we've done those in a couple of principal trainings, but maybe I'll bring it back. Maybe it was the one that was missed or something. But yeah, we can definitely bring it back there.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Yeah.
Patrick, go ahead.
So my question has to do with like health insurance. Does someone with a J-1 visa, does their health insurance go through with the agency set up, or does a school district work with the health insurance?
They can still elect to be on our health plan. We do have the majority that do not elect to be on our health plan because they are required to have coverage through their agency, but they can still elect to be on the health plan if they want.
I have one, I don't understand the process totally, but at some point, is it like 3 years that a J-1 visa can work? Or is there like a point when, because of federal bureaucracy, they can no longer stay with our district? Or?
So what I'm told, but with federal guidelines, it changes, and I'm not sure that we've ever received or had very distinct guidance on it. So what we've always told teachers that reach out to us is to specifically work with their agencies to make sure that whatever they need to renew their visa, that we provide them. So for instance, we've provided, even though teachers had contracts, we had to provide additional letters as proof to agencies that we were still maintaining folks as a teacher. So what we tell, what we said is ask, because each agency is a little bit different too. And so, I mean, that just kind of tells you how it's a bit of a bureaucratic nightmare, because I don't see how five agencies are doing things differently when you're supposed to be doing one thing. But so what we do is we tell folks to work with your agency, and we work with the agencies too. Like we have one, I believe it's called Greenheart, that we frequently communicate with to say, because there's quite a few teachers that work with that agency to make sure do all of these teachers have what they need? What, you know, what do you need from us? And going back and forth to make sure that they're meeting the needs to be able to renew their visas. I have been told anywhere from 3 to 5 years is what I'm told, but I don't understand why it would be 3 to 5. And I have not heard of, in working with other districts, there's other districts in the state that have accepted teachers on a J-1 visa for a much longer time than we have. And what I have been told is that they've not had to tell anybody, your visa is not being renewed, you have to leave. Because I've asked those questions, like, why isn't it very exact? And they've said that they've always been able to renew.
We have any other questions? I'm not seeing any, and I know Ms. McDaniels, I'm not sure I say anything, I'm like, Ivory, that's somewhere else she needed to be after this. And so if we have nothing further, then I thank you for your time.
Oh, absolutely.
And we so appreciate it. I learned so much. I almost want to make you do it for the board. But maybe I'll do that for you.
It's been a very interesting process helping folks navigate, because we've had to learn alongside them as well, because we just didn't want to make the same mistakes before, and we didn't want people to come here and then not be able to stay here. And of course, folks coming over from the Philippines and from any country that on a J-1 visa, they still have to meet our state requirements, and we still have our contractual guidelines that still apply to them as well. So it's making sure that all of these things fit together to help support them and helping them navigate through that. And it is challenging, but I think we've done a really good job of helping to navigate that and just letting people know that, you know, each one is an individual and each one has their individual circumstances. So the more that we communicate and understand what their needs are, we can help navigate that and possibly learn a thing or two ourselves. So, yeah. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
All right. Have a good evening. Thanks.
Okay, so moving on, we do have next month's presentation will be from Teaching and Learning to present again on culturally responsive instruction and professional development. And that'll be our April 16th meeting, which brings us to our old business, which is what we were just discussing, the discussion of next steps for the committee's goal of creating a hiring guide for employees hired from outside of the states or the country, so that they can be welcomed into our community and that we help address the hurdles and roadblocks they face. Using information from this presentation, what is currently being done to better direct our efforts? And so I'll open it up to the committee as far as how we want to go about this priority. Ms. Foshi, if you have things to add too, since that was one you picked.
I think the number one thing that we need to do, because I looked all over our website, but anybody else is welcome to do that too, for just how do I move there? And there's not anything. And there's no guidelines or no links to the borough about, you know, what we have to offer. And if it's that hard to find, we're not in enticing people to move here is what I'm feeling. So I just think that one of the number one things that we need is on our website, a moving to Fairbanks page. And we got a lot to offer. Like there's so many great things about Fairbanks. That'll be easy to highlight. And then the next thing is if they can just add a page to the hiring guide for principals, I will feel so much better as a hiring manager about being able to tell my J-1 visa candidate the step-by-step instructions on what they're doing. Because although the candidate may be getting emails from HR about how they can support them, if I'm not getting those too, then that is an oversight, maybe.
Would it make sense for us to then to
make a letter of recommendation to the IT department that's creating the website and updating it on what we feel should be added then?
Communications department is handling that, so Rebecca Herbie, but yes, I think that would be great. Do we want to also provide them with some of those links and resources that we think are valuable so they don't have to hunt them down?
I would say make that easiest for them, yes.
I guess I'm wondering how are people from the like Philippines or Zimbabwe learning about these jobs or the positions listed on just some general site, or are we like actively soliciting help? And like, so how are they even hearing about the job and being like, oh yeah, Fairbanks Alaska, let's go there?
I get about 4 or 5 emails a day with people sending me their resume, all of their things. So I have a statement that I copy and paste, sending them back to our district website link and telling them that, you know, although I appreciate their interest, this is the proper way to apply for a job in our school district. So I feel like they're searching out, you know, and looking at websites. They're seeing maybe who the principal is, and then even my secretary also gets those emails. So I'm not for sure exactly how they're coming by that, but I think they know that Alaska is a state that you know, is recruiting for teachers, and that when I'm hiring, I'm also getting questions about, do we sponsor visas? So maybe that's a statement we need to have on our page as well, that we're not sponsoring them, and maybe listing Green Heart in some of those, because in the middle of the summer, my candidate or my hire called me and said, I don't think this visa sponsorship is going to work. I don't know how I'm going to get another sponsorship. And, you know, I'm looking online and trying and calling HR and trying to find out how to help them. But so it's a good question.
All those like bureaucratic and logistical details, but also like what to expect with living in Fairbanks, Alaska, and like what transportation looks like, you know, busing, you know, limited hours, food costs, and you know, housing costs, and all those things, the gear that's needed. Like, there's a lot of just costs that come with living here that people don't even think about. But it's all year round, and like, you know, we don't get fresh produce, and you know, dietary restriction stuff, and you know, a lot of limited options being here as well. Yeah.
Not seen more comments, but if you have them, pipe in. What I've written down is that we would like to make a letter of recommendation that includes both resources and recommendations for the administration and the communication department on creating something on our website, like moving to Fairbanks. How do you move to Fairbanks and make the move as easy as possible? There also needs to be a hiring guide for principals, or the hiring guide for principals needs to be updated to include a more robust information on the J-1 visa process, both before and after, or just yeah. Once.
Just okay. At least a step.
That's one that tripped us up.
I remember. I got the pleasure of driving our amazing person at Boreal Sun to the secure or the Social Security office, only to find out that their whole system was down and they were closed. So, all of the bureaucracy. And then I said, also we need to add, and this is all jumbled, but I'll make it more clear, statement that says we don't sponsor visas and give recommendations as to visa places to recommend. And then to Ms. Shoup's part, also fleshing out that area about moving to Fairbanks to include things like transportation, weather, busing, food, housing, the ins and outs of Alaska. I'm wondering if we could lean on other sources in our community that might have that. Like, I would think there's some type of local thing trying to make development that we have something already made that we could point people to.
The borough also has some pretty nice, is it on the economic development tab? Okay.
Recording that so I don't lose it. So I guess my question at this point is there anyone on the committee that would like to put together that recommendation letter, or are you tasking me with it? I'm okay. I think I understand enough. I don't have a bunch of resources, and that definitely sounds like something more people might know. So if people could email me lists of websites and resources, and then I can add them to that letter. And we can have that for the April 16th meeting for the committee to approve. Okay. So we all got homework.
So you want to... So just clarify what you want from us.
If people could email me any of the resources you would like included for the communications department to have to our website, or so that they're not hunting it down and I'm not either, I can flesh out a letter of recommendation that says here's the specific things and say here are the things we'd like the administration to do. But that way I include all of that, and either you can email them or bring them to the April 16th meeting. That way we have all of those pieces included. I did record the economic development for the borough, so I will hunt that one down. Okay, so then moving on to our next one. And this was not an official priority, but something that we moved from a previous meeting was discussions of accommodations that could be offered as part of the hiring process. Ms. Foshi said she was going to bring an accommodations for hiring that she'd found other places, and the committee may vote to forward them as a recommendation to the administration or something else.
So I brought...
These are some examples that I brought. I just did a Google Doc. Flexible scheduling, allowing candidates to schedule interviews at time that suits their needs, might be outside of the standard business hour day. Accessible application process, ensuring that online applicants can screen and with a reader compatibility. So like if it needs to be Braille, or I know there were also some hiring processes for assistive technology for deaf and hard of hearing that needed to be maybe considered during testing or interviews, if that assistive technology needs to be there for screen readers or voice recognition software. And I know that we have that, and we have used that before. I haven't personally, but I've talked to principals who have. Or if we need to arrange an interpreter for someone, modified testing formats, like if there are any tests that administrative folks might have to take, adjusting the format for them, if that's allowing breaks, offering alternative testing methods, accessible interview locations, making sure that interview rooms and the physicality, I think that would only be like in buildings where we have floors, and making sure there's elevator access if they're going to be on another floor, providing information in alternate formats. Those are just a couple, like large prints, audio recordings. And I don't know if all of those things, those are just things that I read from other websites that people were tending to incorporate in order to make the hiring process more accessible to everyone.
Any committee discussion on that?
This might be a great question to push to Ms. Ivory then to what their any accommodation. I think that they asked the question, do you need accommodations? And then what kind of accommodations is usually an explanation from the candidate. But maybe offering what accommodations we have to offer right away might be best too, because it might be something that they haven't thought about.
I don't know that that's in the hiring guide.
So updating the hiring guide to include available accommodations. Okay. And if you can send me that Google Doc, then I can, yeah, the one with the accommodations and modifications, I can forward it to Ivory and ask her what ones of these we do currently have in place and if any of the other ones she thinks would be. And then my brain just lost it. Oh, it was adding a page to the hiring guide would be our recommendation of what accommodations are available. All right, guys, if I don't write it, I'll lose it. And this is how I make sure I get it all done later. All right. And then that brings us to our next old business, which is at the last meeting, the committee discussed creating a memo to the school board regarding the school consolidation process, expressing gratitude to the administration's efforts in supporting students and staff through these transitions. During the committee report at, wasn't the last board meeting, but I think two or three ago, I thanked the administration on behalf of the committee and requested a list of the current initiatives in this area, which is now being compiled. They've had a lot on their plates. Does the committee still want to proceed with an official memo? And if so, who would like to draft it and present it at our April 16th meeting to review? If not, we've got one more meeting in May to be able to do something like that.
Can you explain a little bit further the list of current initiatives in this area?
So at a previous meeting, we talked, I had shared what I knew as a board member about all the things that we were doing to help both schools receiving students as well as schools that are closing due to the budget process. And it's quite a lot. And I asked Dr. Meinert if we did have all that recorded in one place, and we don't. But things include that we have already dates planned out now for the schools that are closing to have parent nights with information at the actual school the current or the students currently attend, where transportation will be there, so will representatives from the schools that are, will be accepting those students, and all of that in one place. They've thought about it from the lens of what will students do during that time, as well as how do we make this accessible for parents to be able to get all that information. We have visit days planned during the school day so they can see what it looks like for the students. So students coming from Midnight Sun would visit either Tickasook or North Pole Elementary during the day and get to experience that, feel what that classroom is like. I believe we're going to try to have t-shirts for those new schools and different ways. Kind of, unfortunately, we have experience in this area that allows us to do better helping these students through this transition. So it was, could we get a list of all the things that the administration and the administrative team has already put in place? When I reviewed it, the committee felt like, okay, a lot had already been done and thought process through this. I know even funds were allocated to making sure that we can, you know, do as good of a job as we can with a difficult task. And I have asked, and Dr. Miner is like, it's in process. There's just so many things. So I don't know when we might get that.
So forgive me, I wasn't at the last meeting. So this is suggesting a memo of thanks from us to the from this committee to the board for the list of things
we're just
they're doing.
Doing a great job putting it all together. And I'm happy too if we want to say that I did during a board meeting publicly thank the administration from the committee and talked about, you know, the amount of things that they are doing. But the committee had said that they felt creating a memo in to thank the board was something they wanted to do. So I didn't want to count job done unless the committee thinks the job is done.
I seem to recall the memo being potentially more about what we would recommend to be done to help students transition into new schools. And like, I remember myself thinking, like, you know, getting like the kids at the new schools, like having like, you know, welcoming packages for the kids coming in, but wanting to know what the district was already doing before we, you know, said do these things. So I think that was part of the memo. I personally don't know that, you know, we need to draft a thanks for the good work from the committee. It'd be great if, like, you know, community members independently, you know, all across the district were doing that. Like, thanks for all the good hard work. So I think, you know, potentially what would be more helpful is if we knew what was happening so we could say, hey, could you maybe, you know, add this or this things that we think would be a good idea to help these kids and parents transition. So, I mean, I guess until we have that information, I don't know that we have much to go on still.
And it sounds like quite a list. I don't know that this is our job, but that list needs to get out to the public so people know everything that the board is doing. But hopefully, is the district going to do that? Or a that sounds like a press release to me, not a memo.
And I might be misremembering the last meeting too. I'm trying to pull up my notes from that one, and they're just not easy to find. It is quite a list. I did share, again, part of that list during the school board meeting. I would say probably I'll encourage Dr. Miner to share it during his superintendent report. I think a press release sounds like we're tooting our own horns. But I do know it's being communicated out to the affected communities of here are the opportunities, here are all the things that are being done. I know we have, they are planning to do things like school spirit welcome things for incoming students coming to those places. I know if I can find the list, I had written out all of the various things that I knew of from the board briefs Dr. Miner sends to the school board of here are all the ways, since the school board is pretty committed to making sure this process happens as well. But I'd have to dig through some too many Google Docs to find it all. Yep.
Perhaps not like a press release, but something, I don't know, like on the district Facebook page, or also like a link on the website. This is what, you know, we are doing, because I think there's a lot of, you know, concern about like we don't know where we're going, we don't know what we're doing, we don't know what to expect. And so if people know that these are things that are happening, like concretely, they can look and read that and like, oh, this, these are the steps, these are the things they're going to do to make sure everyone's feeling welcomed. That would go a long way. Yeah, just like, you know, Facebook or like an email, you know, the district-wide email that goes out.
Also too, like, I'm not sure if this is allowable, but perhaps the community wants to participate in providing things for the students that are impacted, the families that are impacted too.
So I have updates, the consolidation website that has been where we've been sending people now with information on what is happening at each school, kind of that would be a good place to share that list. Have Dr. Meinert share it as part of his superintendent report, share it in some of the district-wide emails the superintendent puts out, and can we ask to have community partners join us in these efforts or find ways to do that? And I just remembered Facebook posts. Did I miss anything or anything else we'd like added? Okay. So I will be sure to draft an email to Dr. Meinert touching on that. Do we want anything more official or anything more from this committee on that? And I'm hoping by April 16th, a lot of that will have happened and we'll see it naturally, but I will be sure to bring back the stuff I know that has happened. And then that just brings us to new business. And I added this, we are down to our last two meetings after this one. And our current priorities, it sounds like we're going to get our hiring guide document pretty well done there as far as a different outcome, but one that works. We have people coming to talk culturally responsive professional development, and hopefully we'll finish that up, which then just leaves a resolution against bullying as one of our last priorities that we haven't addressed. So I know your partner is not here, but Ms. Aaron, would you like to provide an update and let us know how we can help that bullying resolution proceed?
I think we're most of the way there. I intended to have time today to forward it to Ms. Lammer so she could forward it to the committee. Just like maybe some tweaking here and there, I can get it sent out probably next day or two. I'll have a few moments. And then just any feedback that people have on it, anything that they think should be added. You know, something I thought that was important to have in there is like empowering students to, you know, advocate for each other, and then, you know, knowing when to reach out to an adult for help in interventions, and also like, you know, adults role modeling. And, you know, helping that it's an ongoing issue in our communities, worldwide, nationwide, you know, in our state, in our community, within the district, with students and adults alike. And so it's a big deal, and it seems very timely these days that we really stand up and say that the bullying is not allowed. Like, you know, we need to respect each other. We need to a respectful environment in which we can all learn and do what's best. But yeah, so I can get that to Ms. Lammers, and she can put out if anyone has suggestions about any aspects, I guess, that'd be missing. And so I think if everyone has that, or at least has them by the next April meeting, and then it could get, you know, finalized, it should be ready to go by the May meeting in its final state. And I don't know how the board would look at it. Like, there's like reading at certain times of the year that they read resolutions, but I think it would be a good one to maybe do at the beginning of a school year. So like an August resolution reading. So starting the year off with like, these are our intentions. That would maybe be board purview.
Go ahead.
I do have a question. So we offer these resolutions and should the board adopt them? So then I guess I think in terms of actually acknowledging the resolution, like, do we provide resources that the schools can actually utilize to make sure that it's not just a resolution on paper, but something that's put into practice? I know that's probably outside of our scope, but I'm just curious about that and if it's actually put into practice and not just words on a paper.
Ms. Shoup, do any of the whereases include like a website resource that focuses on this topic? Or I know oftentimes our resolutions will bring up other outside resources to just flag them within there.
No, it's not citing any specific resources to lean on.
Okay. I can speak to that though. So there's a teaching and learning drive that has all kinds of resources in it for, and I can't speak specifically if it says like, you know, some of the resolutions that just came out were Purple Up and the Month of the Military Child. And Georgia Sandgren does a really great job of sending out a lot of information and usually doing some kind of newsletter or, you know, to say, here's some resources or here's some ways that you can celebrate this with the children in your building. So specifically for that one that I can think of, like the celebration of, I'm going to mispronounce it, but Paratovich, that celebration that happens in, I think it's January. There's resources in the teaching and learning drive. So, but we could say that specifically tagging that in the teaching and learning drive, because I don't think it's tagged like that. Some of them are in like social studies curriculum area, or they might be in another area. But, and then the bullying ones would probably live in counseling documents and things like that. So yes, but maybe not as transparent as we could make it.
Question on clarifying. So once the resolution goes to board and it's heard and approved, then it's distributed throughout the school district to employees, principals, and staffing, correct? So that then they can implement them? That's the question for me.
I can say they play on a TV out there. They are posted within buildings sometimes. I don't know. I know myself when I was a teacher, how much I was aware of resolutions was not much at all. But administration, like we did celebrate months and things, but that came down from the principal more than it happened at a classroom level, unless there was something we were really interested in.
I would say that that's very true. So when I get resolutions, because I know they're sent to principals, I print them out, take them to our staff meeting, let our staff know that these are some resolutions that were passed by the board and how would we like to implement them. Does anybody have any ideas that they want to bring or submit? And then I usually hang them prominently on our, I can't say that I do this every time, but I try to hang them on our board as you walk in so you can see those. So the two that are there now, I think, are the Month of the Military Child and just came out. There's another one that came out that I just posted.
The disability awareness.
Hi, Erin.
I guess I imagine that there should be somewhere in our district policies that are, you know, against bullying. And that's in like student handbooks, you know, you shouldn't be bullying and, you know, these are the various things. But I guess the question is like, and I think, you know, it's maybe gets casually touched on here and there in the school, but it feels almost like maybe there needs to be more specific, like, what is bullying? What does bullying look like? How do you stand up to bullies and, like, really make it a conversation with students? And, you know, tie it in not just bullying, but, like, how do we respect people? How are we kind to people? How do we help people? And have, like, a more of a conversation. And, like, you know, this is stuff that should be happening at home, but we know that, you know, it doesn't always happen at home, and that kids come in and they say terrible things that we know they came from adults, because it's not something you'd get from your peers necessarily. So, like, you know, school is a learning environment. It should also be, you know, social norms about how we treat each other or how we don't treat each other. So potentially, you know, even though we, you know bullying is bad, like, having more of the conversation and, like, how to have a healthier, you know, safer learning environment. And I don't know, putting it into a class, like, at the beginning of the year, we talk about, you know, the kindergarten things, like, these are the things you do, be nice and be helpful. But, like, every year, K through 12, these are our expectations of how we treat each other or how we don't treat each other.
Does the resolution address, so it's policy 1048.2, which is under students' rights and responsibilities, and that's where we define what bullying is. Nope, I said does it.
No, it doesn't.
Okay. So, yeah, that's 1048.2, and we have a new policy manual. It is super, like, I didn't know that. I was like, I think we have something, so don't think that I came, like, where you can search by keywords now when we switched over to ASB's platform. So all I did is type in bullying. It's mentioned in a lot of different documents, but that's the one in the title that is behavioral standards involving violence and or weapons, intimidation behavior / bullying. But we could also reference that in there to say that here are the policies that involve that. And I think, I don't know that we got to it, but we've passed other resolutions from this committee. They go onto the board, and then the board considers it, and they might alter and change it some too, and then they eventually pass the resolution that way as well. So their prior people have come, and if it came from this committee, gotten to speak and have time set aside during the meeting, the first time it's being considered, as to this came out of the diversity committee, and here's the thought process, and here's why we'd like you to consider it. So you get time to advocate during the meeting for all the work that was done.
So in a general sense, because I wasn't trying to speak specifically to the bullying resolution, but it sounds like it would be beneficial to include a list of resources that could be added to the teaching and learning side of things, perhaps.
So I've got, for our next meeting, Aaron will send it to Ms. Caitlin for feedback from the committee, and we'll bring it forward at our next meeting. And then after the April meeting, once the committee has time to discuss, we'll move it to the May meeting for finalization and a vote. And then I'm not sure, we might pick a month at that time, or we might see if there is a bullying month somewhere, if it's in naturally, but it sounds like something we're expecting the school board next year to act on, unless it happens to be a beginning somewhere in there that works. Go ahead.
Is the moment when they adopt it that mean that, like, that's when it will be like reread or reaffirmed each year?
Usually it's whatever month that we put in there. So the disability one, we adopted well before the month it actually applied to. And so Ms. Richardson actually held on to it and didn't even release it until closer to the month that it would be relevant. Not that it's not always relevant. Disability definitely is. But that way it was fresher in principals' minds than if it had been released when we passed it, I think, like 3 months prior to the month that was chosen.
So the committee could potentially recommend, like, we think it would be helpful to have this reaffirmed, like, each August at the beginning of the school year.
Yep. All right. That brings us to the end of our agenda. So are there any closing comments from committee members?
I just wanted to say that as part of trying to look it up, safe and civil schools, and well, as part of the curriculum, partially in the health curriculum, and then in, let me go back to what I was looking at. Because I am finding a couple of things in, oh, there we go. Safer, smarter kids. So some of the things that the counselors are doing with the students have a lot of those resources in there. And specifically, I found like the bullying, power and control, will, and then bystander intervention for bullying. So there are some good resources in there. And I think there's more in safer, smarter kids that are in there. But if we could put them specifically under a label, that'd be easier to locate.
So I can add that we should recommend teaching and learning consolidate bullying resources into its own file. And then I didn't even know teaching and learning had a resource file. So maybe we should reference that in the resolution. So then other teachers who maybe aren't aware can be like, there's a what now? And then we might use it. I've added those notes so we don't lose them. Are there any other closing comments, things for the good of the order? Anyone online that would like to say anything?
No, ma'am, nothing from Dr. Palmer. Just thank you all for having me.
Thank you so much, Dr. Palmer. With that, I just want to thank the committee for another great meeting, and we've got two more, and I hope you all have a wonderful evening. We are adjourned.